Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, January 26, 2017, and with me today I have Brian Chaffin. How are you, Brian?
Hey, man. It's good to be here.
It's awesome to have you here. And Dave Hamilton, it's great to have you here today. How are you?
I am quite well, in fact. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. And also excellent, we have Blue Apron as a sponsor today, and I'm looking forward to telling everyone about them soon. But what I want to talk about right now is the iPhone and Apple and producing iPhones. So there's been talk lately about where Apple is building iPhones, and talk about the possibility of Apple bringing iPhone production into the United States. And there was a point when wasn't it Steve Jobs that said he'd like to bring more production into the United States, but there just wasn't an infrastructure to support it?
No, what he said is those jobs aren't coming back. Okay. He said it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yes, I do remember that. I thought he said something at some point about infrastructure as well. But
it's not just the infrastructure. It's also the worker culture and the sheer number of workers needed to do iPhones currently.
Yeah, well, Foxconn has what amounts to company towns building electronic devices.
Right. And Americans fought
towns
and
just
died.
For iPhones too.
Yeah, that's true. Towns just for iPhones.
At the turn of the previous century, Americans fought and died to not have company towns. That's one of the things that was, you know, the labor fights were being fought over. Right. At the turn of the previous century. And I can't see that making that step backwards and going to, you know, the Americans being willing to live in company towns.
Yeah. So
dormitory inside of,
right.
Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
No, I think we've got a little bit of Skypey stepping on one another here, but the question that, the first thing to acknowledge is, yes, there is a huge labor force that it takes to produce the number of iPhones that the world demands, or that Apple chooses to make, whichever way you want to look at that. Mm-hmm. But it takes a huge labor force. But in terms of the cost per iPhone, that labor is relatively low. It's about $8, right? And so, but moving that labor to the U.S., if that were even possible, sort of discounting what Brian just said, which is obviously not to be discounted, but if they were to do that, it would go up percentage wise substantially, but it wouldn't be very much. It would be, you know, up by maybe $20 or $30 in absolute terms. It would be, you know, $20 or $30. So many, you know, many times more. We're not talking about the $2,000 iPhone in order to get it to be made in the U.S. However, we can't discount what Brian just said, and it might be very difficult to make that number of iPhones in the U.S., keeping the current level of automation the same. I think if they were going to move iPhone production to the U.S., they would have to do it with a massive increase in the amount of automation. And I say that from, you know, not even a 10,000 foot view, but from, you know, like a view from the moon. And I don't really know the details of how much more automation could be added, even if they wanted to, at any price. So we might be talking about the $2,000 iPhone for a few years in order to do that, at least in terms of what Apple would want to charge to make that all happen.
Now, okay, so now if we look at the automation side, and let's assume that there's a lot more Apple can do with automation for iPhone production, just for sake of argument.
And we're making a lot of assumptions for this conversation, by the way.
Oh, boy,
yeah,
howdy.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Boy, howdy. Yeah, yeah, right.
So if Apple were able to dramatically increase the automation on the production line for iPhones, and they bring iPhone production into the United States, my assumption is that it brings production into the United States, but it doesn't create nearly as many jobs as people are thinking or assuming.
No, it actually cannot bring that many jobs because there is no place for Apple to open a factory or for Foxconn to open a factory for Apple in the United States where you can have 200,000 people, 500,000 people working on making iPhones. It's not going to happen in the United States. We don't have the population density. We don't have the number of people willing to living in company towns, right? We don't have the number of people who are willing to live inside the factory. There is a whole lot that goes into the manufacturing mindset that is taking place in China right now. And a lot of that is stuff that Americans are not going to do.
Right. Even though we might like the idea of Tim Cook looking like Veruca Salt's father in Willy Wonka overseeing this whole big factory, I don't think that's going to happen, right?
Mm-mm.
The image, though?
I love the image.
It's fantastic. Okay. I would be shocked if Apple could make this happen if they needed 10,000 employees or, maybe 20 or 30,000 employees to do what there are currently, somewhere like roughly 1 million people.
Is that how many it is?
Well, yeah, but they're not doing all Apple stuff necessarily all
okay.
the time.
I see what you're saying.
That was a figure from a while back.
Wow.
So, it could actually be more at this point.
It
could be less because Apple is...
Could be less, right.
Apple invents a lot of its own manufacturing techniques. Apple actually is heavily invested in robotics from the standpoint of manufacturing, right? The factory in Austin, for instance, is heavily roboticized.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That makes quote unquote Mac Pros.
Yeah. Yeah. Has anybody been in there lately to see if Tim Cook looks like the Veruca Salt's father? Because I'm not convinced they're making too many Mac Pros in there.
My guess is that there's actually Oompa Loompas dancing around singing songs about childhood woes.
So we've changed now.
7 months ago.
Right. Right. So now it's just been taken over and Willy Wonka now owns that factory.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Let's go with that. They're not doing anything because no one buys Mac Pros because they're old. Anyway, let's rabbit hole.
I'm here for comic relief.
It's been a long time since Veruca said, "Daddy, make me a Mac Pro."
Yeah. So I like, and I think Tim Cook, just based on both what he said in about this and also sort of what appears to be his worldview, would like to bring manufacturing of the iPhone to the US. I don't think he would be against that if it were realistic. Some.
Well, yeah. He actually needs...
Only want to make the iPhones that are going to be sold in the US here in the US. Mm-hmm. The rest should be made elsewhere. Yeah.
He wants them being made in China because as much as China, the current... leadership in China sort of doesn't have the same attitude about all these Western companies manufacturing stuff in China.
Right.
But you still having them manufactured in China is still better from a local politics standpoint. And the same thing is true in Brazil. It's actually a must in Brazil. If you want to avoid the tariffs, you got to make the stuff there.
You got to make it there. Right.
Yeah, and the same thing appears to be the case in India. So, yeah, Apple wouldn't want to bring all of that. And so from that standpoint, Apple wouldn't necessarily have to have the same massive labor force that it's using in China, but it would still have to have the kind of labor force that I don't think you can assemble in the United States anymore. That's what Steve Jobs was talking about. Tim Cook has mentioned it too. This is the manufacturing reality. The idea that we're going to have, I think we've lost some 2.4 million manufacturing jobs in the last, 10 years or something was what I was reading recently. And the idea that they're going to be brought back is just not, it has no basis in reality.
Well, and And when we're looking at the iPhone, we're not even looking at production jobs that have been lost. We're looking at production jobs that never existed here. So it's not even like there's anything to fall back on and say, okay, well, now let's go back and fire up these factories and expand them and see what we can do.
There's and don't forget about all of the other, all of the components that are being made over in Asia, in Taiwan and in China and in Japan. And there's a lot of stuff that is taking place from a manufacturing standpoint that is all very centralized in China. It'd be incredibly difficult to bring all of that stuff here in the States.
Okay. So what I'm getting out of this is, while it sounds nice to say, hey, Apple, bring iPhone production into the United States, at least right now, it's probably not practical.
With Apple selling fewer and fewer Macs all the time, it might be increasingly more possible to bring more Mac production to the United States, because those aren't made in the same kinds of numbers in the first place. And they also have, they don't have the same kind of, tolerances, because, they're not as small.
That's true.
Right? I mean, the iPhone is an amazing piece of machinery, and it requires a lot of very, very specialized manufacturing stuff. I would imagine that Macs are easier to manufacture at this point. And like I said, Apple's selling fewer and fewer of them, so it might be a lot easier to make those here.
All right, so maybe that's the compromise Apple would make if they want to bring more production into the United States.
Okay, fine. I'm a little bitter.
I hadn't picked up on that. Huh. Hey, we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Blue Apron, and I think it's pretty cool that Blue Apron is sponsoring us, because what they do is find really high quality, really good fresh produce and meat and poultry and fish, so that they can come up with these amazing dinners for you. And the way this works is, They come up with these dinner plans, and you subscribe to their service, and you pick out the ones that you want for the week, and then a box shows up at your door, and it's packed with these really clever ice pack things, so you get this fresh food that's already measured out, so you have the right proportions for whatever it is that you're supposed to make. They come with these really nicely printed cards, like sheets, that give you photographs showing exactly which ingredients you're using in a recipe, which is nice if you don't know what something is. That for a long time, I had no idea what arugula was, and I couldn't get anyone to tell me. They would just say, it's arugula. But if you have a photograph, okay, there you go. Now you know that arugula is this kind of leafy thing that looks sort of like spinach. Great. And then you can flip the card over, and you have step-by-step instructions with pictures showing how to make your meal. And when you're done cooking it, what you have is this thing that actually tastes really good. It's made from fresh ingredients, as if you had gone to the grocery store yourself, but you didn't have to do that. And you didn't even have to sit down and think about what new recipes do I want to invent or try, because they've taken care of that part for you. So it gets you out of that rut of eating the same thing every single week, and it saves you a little bit of time, because you don't have to go to the grocery store, and you're eating fresh, good food, and you're learning new recipes, which is pretty awesome. So even more awesome, you can get 3 free meals from your first order for free. So what you need to do to make that happen is go to the Blue Apron website. So that's blueapron.com/TDO. And when you go to that URL, you pick out whatever meal plan you want, and then 3 of the meals from that order are going to be free for you. And you're not even going to pay shipping. So it's a great way to save some money and try out something new and eat some really good food and have a good time making it as well. So that URL is blueapron.com/TDO. Go there and get 3 meals for free with your first order, and you get free shipping too. Thank you, Blue Apron, for being our sponsor. Okay, So the other thing I wanted to talk about today is APFS. And the reason this is coming up for me now is because we have the iOS 10.3 developer beta that's out, and it is moving the file system that we're using into APFS, which is part of Apple's master plan. So that's coming to the Mac as well. And I think we need to figure out what this means for average users. And Dave, you know a little bit about APFS, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I learned a little bit about it when it was first announced back at WWDC, easy for you to say. And yeah, so it is a new file system. Mm-hmm. I suppose the place to start is that HFS Plus, which is what we all currently have on our Macs and I believe our iPhones.
I'm assuming so.
Yep. Is a very old file system. So it's a lot of this is that we have, and when I say we, I mean Apple, has sort of pushed the limits of HFS Plus very, very far. Perhaps further than is safe, but they can't keep adding on to it. For example, when they decided they wanted to use Time Machine, or they wanted to build Time Machine. Time Machine uses something called hard links to point to have multiple directory entries for the same file on the disk. So that's why you can have all of these Time Machine backups, you know, one per hour, and they all appear, if you start doing like sizings on all these things, they all appear to be full backups, which if you add it all up takes up way more space than you actually have on that disk. And that's because it's really just a bunch of individual directory entries that each point to exactly the same file. That's a great idea. The problem is the way those links are created in the file system. It was not native to HFS or even HFS Plus. It was built in, and it's essentially all saved in a text file at the root of your volume. That's an oversimplification of it, but it's
still
effective.
Holy crap. That's scary.
But holy crap. Right. The fact that it even works astounds me. And more importantly, astounds, like, I had a conversation with an Apple file system engineer, not Apple file system, not APFS, but a file system engineer at Apple, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. And they were like, yeah, look, when we put that in there, it was just to be compatible with Unix. It wasn't so that we could actually use it for anything. And, you know, and then somebody found that it was there and used it for Time Machine. And we were like, holy crap, but it works. So, but it's sort of, you know, I don't want to say bursting at the seams, but do much more to it and it will be. So with that, Apple set about building a new file system that includes all of the stuff that it would have needed anyway, plus lots of what I'll call modern constructs and features that just don't exist in any of the older file systems. And that's things like disk encryption is built in to the file system now. So it's, you don't have to do like right now to run File Vault, your Mac is actually creating several separate volumes on your drive and then sort of piecing them all together so that your machine can boot, but also then, you know, decrypt your data partition and all of this stuff, or boot, not, it doesn't fully boot. It gets actually a very short amount into the boot and then does all this stuff. So that now that little quote unquote hack can go away, right? We don't need core storage to be doing that much work to make encryption work. It just is native to the file system. So it's safer and more efficient. Not that File Vault 2 isn't efficient. It's actually pretty insanely efficient, especially given everything. It's just insanely efficient. I'm not even going to say, but it's just insanely efficient. But still, this is now native to it. It's not an add-on, right? We get clones in Apple file system. So those allow the OS to make really efficient copies on the same volume without occupying additional storage space. So it's just tracking like deltas and things like that. And similar to clones, but a little bit different, we get snapshots where we can create a read-only instance of the file system. obviously very handy from a backup standpoint, but also a fault tolerance standpoint. Let's say you get, you start, you know, deleting files that you shouldn't be, or you happen to get a piece of malware, or you install something that's really mucking up your system. Now you have this snapshot you can go back to, right? Crash protection, every file system, even HFS Plus, has some level of crash protection in it, where like journaling is one popular one, one common one with HFS Plus that keeps track of things that have happened to the file system, so that if there is a crash, it can actually replay that journal and recreate anything that didn't quite get saved the way it should have. So nice. For data integrity and yeah, and things like that. But that's now, and that I think, well, no, journaling came with the plus, I believe, of HFS Plus. So that might be considered native to that. But we get that native now in APFS. The big one is that APFS was built with SSDs, flash storage, in mind. Every other file system we have, right, every other file system we have was very much built for spindle drives. HFS Plus has what it calls its hot files management, where it's actually defragmenting your disk and moving files that it determines you should have defragmented, either because you use them more often or because the OS prioritizes them for another reason. It moves them to the, I think it's the inner portion of the drive's platters, so that they are more easily read and more efficiently read. So that's cool, but you don't need to do that with an SSD. It's all very different. And there are some things you do need to do with an SSD that HFS Plus just doesn't do because it wasn't built for SSDs. So that's really the, I think that's sort of the driving force behind it, to make things not only more speed efficient, but power efficient and also friendlier for the SSD. So because SSDs have a maximum number of write cycles, there's actually been a lot of sort of hand waving about how, whether or not that is even better than what we have to deal with rotational drives, but still, they do have this. And so you can do things with an SSD that make your operations more friendly to them when you know you're using an SSD. And so now the file system is built for that. And we're starting to see it, right? Because iOS 10.3 beta 1 not only uses APFS, which is what we're calling this, it converts your existing HFS Plus file system to APFS when you first install it. And I would assume if it goes well in beta, well, stands to reason that when we all get iOS 10.3 on our production phones, then we will all convert to APFS. Yeah, and that might be really helpful for battery life and things like that. It could make a significant difference. I don't want to say it's going to double your battery life or anything like that.
But a noticeable difference.
It could be. It could be. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well,
that's interesting stuff, Dave.
Yeah, and it's, you know, at first when Apple said when we found out that iOS was sort of the first production implementation of this, I thought, well, that's interesting that they're choosing the platform upon which they have more users to do this as opposed to less. But the iPhone's always had flash storage. Mm-hmm. The iPhone has never had Time Machine. It's never had Fusion drives. I mean, sorry, you know, it's never had any of these wonky, like if you take a sampling of 100 Macs and 100 iPhones, those 100 iPhones are going to be very consistent in the way they manage their file system.
So with the Macs.
Not necessarily so. Right. Exactly. You know, even out of the factory, those 100 Macs could all have slightly different configurations and uses. And oh, by the way, the users are still using Time Machine, which absolutely does not, like, that needs to be. They might have something they call Time Machine on the Mac with APFS, but it will only be similar in name and out and like eventual outcome function. It keeps a backup. But in terms of the way it works under the hood, nothing will be the same. So they've got a lot of work to do before they can roll this out on the Mac. It's frankly quite a bit easier for them and more consistent to do it on the iPhone. So that's why that's happening.
They can probably find the surprises with all of us using it on iPhones so they can fix those potential problems for the Mac before they roll it out there.
That's right.
Quick poll here. How would you guys like to be on the team responsible for making sure that goes right?
Well, I'd be happier being on it today than I would if Steve Jobs were still running Apple. Because, ooh, you know.
That's not good.
I'm just saying better now than then, because at least you likely, and I'm projecting here, you likely don't have somebody yelling at you saying, why are you ruining my company when it goes wrong?
No, you just have someone giving you a very, very cold, intense anger that that makes you cry.
Yeah, that's right. But much better to let like push that stuff down, repress. That's much better, I think. No, yes. I actually don't think that at all.
Now, as they say in the Book of Mormon, the musical, flip the switch, turn it off.
That's right. Yeah. So no, I may or may not know people that are on that team, and would assume that it is a very stressful time for them.
Yeah. I can't even imagine, man. Oh man, I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Hey, on that happy note, we need to wrap up. Dave, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah, loads of fun. And Brian, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was fun. Let's go with fun. I like fun. Yeah. Fun's good.
It was fun, and it was enlightening as well. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Definitely, very.
Yeah, and thank you to Blue Apron for being our sponsor. Head over to blueapron.com/TDO and get the three meals out of your first order for free. Also, you get free shipping. Thank you so much, Blue Apron. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We will see everyone again tomorrow.